This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We are taking a gander at what our relationship is like with food. 0861-987-000. As we welcome our guest, Des Tswayile, independent financial planner. Des, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Good afternoon, Faith, and good afternoon to the listeners today.
We've also got Samantha Rajaram, who is a lecturer at the South African College of Applied Psychologists and at UNISA, as well as SACP. Yes, so thank you so much, Samantha, for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you, Faith. Nice to be here, as usual.
We've also got Matume Diala, who is our dietitian. Matume, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Good afternoon, Faith, and good afternoon to the listeners.
You know, having to tackle Samantha, let's start off with you, the relationship one has with food. I wonder how conscious we are as a people about what we do most of the day. And some people eat, like we eat, we spend every single day eating, right? And yet do we become conscious of why are we eating, what our relationship is like with what we're eating, and what our relationship is like with ourselves within this process of consuming?
Thank you, Faye. Yes, I think that it's a relationship we rather keep hidden. It's a kind of subtle relationship. But just as we have relationships with our families and friends, and we have ups and downs in those relationships, as odd as it might sound, we also have a relationship with food. We just don't see it as a relationship because it doesn't seem as a physical person. But there is a relationship there, and we have this relationship throughout the day, and we obviously interact with this subtle person throughout the day. Must remember, we are not born with a relationship towards food or in a relationship with food. We're born with a very neutral attitude towards food, but an intuitive one. And you must also remember that from a young age, we have these influences that creep in and craft this relationship that we have with food, because we observe others, and we also use food as a synonym with celebrations or somber. So we're creating that relationship, but because it's not a physical person, we don't see it as an interaction and we don't see it as much harm. But it is a relationship, and we are interacting in that relationship throughout the day. So we really do need to become more observant of that as a partner within ourselves.
Can we become, and I like what you're saying, is that we are not conscious of the fact that we've got a relationship with food because it's not a human, it's not in physical form. But Matume, can we become obsessed with this relationship with food? Because it's very difficult for us to actually even get to a point of admitting that there's something wrong, right? I'm eating here not because I'm hungry, but I'm eating because I am hurt or I'm feeling insecure or I'm feeling empty inside or lonely. We never talk about that kind of relationship.
Most of the time, besides that relationship, we eat because food is available, not necessarily that we are hungry or anything. Yes, we've got emotional eaters. We've got problems, and then we feel the best option is to eat so that we can ease our emotions and everything. Sometimes people have the emotional eaters, which literally sometimes they just don't eat at all. That those that when they have problems, they don't eat at all. So it's important as yourself to understand what kind of a what kind of relationship do you have with food? Are you, when you've got emotions, do you want to eat? Or again, when you've got emotions, you don't want to eat, or you're eating because food is available, not necessarily that we are hungry or anything. In terms of health, it's always better to eat because your body needs to survive, not necessarily that we're eating because, you know, I got to Faith's house and there's food available, and then while I Faith, please give me food. So we need to understand what relationship we have with food and have a good relationship with food and make sure that whatever food we have relationship with is probably something that's not going to have a harmful health effect, e.g. something that's...
Oh, Matume, we're going to get you a clearer signal. I know it's probably load shedding that it always does this with our signals. But there's the amount of money, right, that South Africa's healthcare system is spending on obesity. It's about 33 billion rand, which is about 15.38% of government's expenditure. We actually don't see the cost of obesity or the cost of diet-related illnesses?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one can call it a hidden cost, if you like, because remember that cost, it is also not direct, because it's the by or at least what comes after that people are gets treated for. Mm. Could it be cardiovascular diseases? Could it be digestive diseases or related diseases? Could it be any other, non-communicable disease that could be as a result of that is being treated? And in that, we don't actually look at the core of the causes. But where research has been made, and it shows that this is where people are actually, affected by, which is the food that they eat. One also has to think about, the choices of the food that we eat. But at the end of the day, as well as a country, we cannot live without having to treat people for the diseases that they are, but they need also the advice, proper advice from the relevant professionals, especially like dietitians and so forth, especially where available, to actually help our people to also make the right choices of food. Yes, of course, it is not always that it is reasonable in terms of spend, but at the same time, it also costs the country in terms of spend in treating people.
Yeah. Samantha, though, how do I know that I've got actually a negative relationship with food? So what are the telltale signs? And then I will go on to the positive in just a moment. But how do I know, and Munshu Ntswane is also asking this one, how do I know that I've got a bad relationship with food?
All right. You need, from a psychological point of view, you need to observe the triggers before and after food. It's very important for you to look at, are you overeating? Did you just have a meal and then now you are craving a meal in close proximity of the last time you ate? Are you eating when you're not really hungry? Do you find yourself eating in response to certain emotions like disappointment, anger, or stress? Are you micromanaging your eating as well? Because remember, you speak about obesity, but we also got the opposite end of the scale in terms of anorexia. And have you tried many diets without success? Are you measuring your calories all the time? Is it something that, or do you feel anxious before or after you've eaten? Mm. So these are some of the signs that you have to watch out with. And how often are you thinking about the next meal?
Wow, how often are you thinking about the next meal? If I spend most of my time thinking about eating, that says something about my relationship with food.
I would like to think so, that you're spending far too much of time after having just eaten, constantly thinking about what's next to eat. So you're filling that gap, which you could have filled with other activities, trying to replace it with discomfort that you get from food.
And it's a deep one. And then from a positive, how do I know I've got a positive relationship with food?
It's when you enjoy the food, you're able to celebrate with it, you're able to use it to ensure that it adds to your nutrition and your good health. You're able to have it in the time limits, and it's able to give you that energy that you need. And it's not overextending itself in your budget and on your plate.
We're going to talk about it. What's your relationship like with food? And how many of us actually are emotional eaters or emotional non-eaters? If you're like me, I'm a self-confessed emotional non-eater. When I'm sad, that's when I go skinny and I go hungry. And if I'm going through something, that's when I don't eat. I actually have to be forced to eat this because I don't enjoy food when I'm going through something. But if I'm happy, what? It is a good day on a meal day. That's when I think even my team has noticed that that's when you start eating. You start seeing me with a different kind of meals that I eat. I'm always eating. People always comment in this office about how I'm always eating because I love it. I love being in a good space where food and I are there to enjoy each other. But it's not always the case, is it? So what's your relationship like with food? It's Office One. Let's get your latest Empower News.
Urgent, topical, timely. Power 98.7. Getting you talking. about what matters.
Indeed, we are looking into our bodies this afternoon and we are discovering what our relationship is like with food. What is your relationship with food like? Do you eat to live or do you live to eat? Are you obsessive about what you're eating? Are you obsessive about meals? Are you an emotional eater? Does it fulfill you sometimes? You eat because you're sad or do you not eat because you're sad? Have you ever had those moments where food just tastes terrible? Just everything just tastes terrible. That could be an indication that you've got a very negative relationship with food. But on the other side of it, we've also sitting with South Africa where half of adults in this country, half of adults are actually obese, right? And they're actually proposing a 10% increase amongst obesity within 2030. Now, when you're looking at it, it's about 11% of people older than 15 have had diabetes in 2021. And this is much higher than Nigeria's prevalence of just 4%. So what is our relationship like with food? We still continue with Madume Diala, our dietitian, Samantha Rajaram, our psychologist, as well as Deza Tswayile, our independent financial planner. And of course, you on 0861-987-000. But, you know, this statistic around how obesity in South Africa starting at the age of 15, even less, Madume, means that we are also instilling a negative relationship with food amongst our children and we think it's okay. So can you just shed light in terms of what parents are doing that is adding to this obesity margin, especially amongst young people? I mean, at 15, if you're obese, I only imagine what this actually has on you as a growing body. So what are we doing that is incorrect that we keep doing as parents?
I hope my line is quite better than before.
Yes, a little bit better.
Yes, yeah. I think even obesity in kids starts very early than 15 years old. You see a whole lot of obese kids in the pediatric ward or even the kids that come through the office. One, it's about what kind of food are we buying at home? Because kids rely on what is that is in the house that mostly they eat. What is that we are advising our kids to eat? You know, when you buy food, are we just buying Zimba chips? Are we just buying a whole lot of sweets? And we forget to buy fruits. And you come across parents saying kids don't like fruits, but you give them sweets they want to eat. We need to change that. When we do kids' lunch boxes, what are we putting in the lunch boxes? Because if what you put in the lunch box is what the kid normally eats, that's what the kid will normally eat on every day, whether they're at school or not, would want to eat those things because those are the things that they're accustomed to. Do we advise our kids to exercise? You know, or it's school, come back, we watch TV, and then we never let kids to exercise because that also plays a very important role. But again, it starts with us adults as we buy food. What is it that we have at home? Because that's the choices that the kids are going to make with the food that we have at home.
It then becomes imperative that parents have a positive relationship with food. But if I'm eating chips and sweets and chocolate, oh no, I'm saying all the things that I'm eating, so I'm feeling very guilty with this conversation. But if I'm doing all of this, right, and I'm doing it at an emotional level, and you know what is also what I've noticed is Samantha, maybe you can attest to this, movies, right? Every time a woman gets dumped or every time there's a heartbreak, you see that they open up a tub of 2 liter ice cream and they eat it. So we've even romanticized eating. A woman will open a packet of Oreos and then she will eat. It's only because I watch Bridget Jones' Diaries. But a woman will open a packet of Oreos and then she'll eat. A guy will get dumped and he will drink alcohol and then he'll open up a food and then he'll eat. So we've almost associated negative emotion with food being the appeaser.
I think you're quite right. We are modeling this behavior that we're seeing others doing, but I would like to say I think it's very important for us not to label our relationship with food as good or bad. The minute we do that, then it gives that particular property, the food, power over us. So it's very important for us not to judge ourselves and to look at food as either being good or bad, but to look at have a balanced, healthy relationship with food. And I think a lot of what we see in terms of social media and the role modeling that comes from that, yes, is that food is the go-to when you are experiencing these emotions, because we've seen it over time. It's been tradition that this is the way it does. Or is dealt with, but that is simply to appease the audience. We need to look at other healthier emotional outlets for issues such as breakup and depression and anxiety, etc., rather than going to that common property that we know, which is food. So I think that's where the exercise comes in. That's where building a very, very healthy mindset comes in. That's where preparing for stress and being able to deal with it also comes in, rather than simply just reaching for that ice cream tub. I'm much like you, Faith. I can't eat when I'm depressed or anxious or stressed.
Yeah, food does not taste good. You know, food tastes lovely when I'm happy. What? And I want to cook too. So I love cooking. So I want to cook when I'm happy. I want to just, you know, spoil people with food. Mm. But let me be sad. We're all not eating. Let me go to Pretoria. Beverly, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks to you, Mama. Go ahead.
I'm good. Hey, you know, the topic is really sad because I'm the culprit of all the situation that you've been talking about.
Okay.
But I'm the opposite towards you. So when I'm happy, I can be health conscious. But when I'm stressed, I eat anything and anything. And I think it started when I had my first pregnancy. I grew up as a very petite young girl. So after my first pregnancy, I all went pear-shaped. I gained weight. I'm actually size 40 as we speak.
Yeah.
And I go back when I have stress, I eat double. I gain weight even more. So it's just a stressful situation and I don't even know how to get out of it. So I'm a very emotional eater.
So you double the amount that you eat when you're stressed?
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, a lot.
Matume,
That's where my comfort is. And I think because I lost so much confidence, I don't even like to go outside. Like, even somebody, when he invites me for a party, it becomes a stressful situation. I don't want to associate myself with people. It's like that. I closed myself in.
Sure. And thank you so much, Beverly, for calling in and sharing your experience. This is not an easy topic, and I want us to get this clear. It isn't. It's not, and it's difficult simply because it needs us to introspect on something that is very intimate and that we overlook, right? And it allows us to, and sometimes it's actually associated with guilt and shame and beating yourself up. So I take to mind that it's not an easy conversation to have, but it's one that is necessary if we're going to develop healthy characteristics and develop just all of us as a whole. Matume, Beverly is saying she eats double when she's sad, you know, or when she's stressed. How can she counter this, or how can she solve for this?
It's probably one, she needs to start with the food choices that she makes when she's stressed out. Instead of probably going to sit down with a pack of potato chips, you're probably better with the fruit. I know the fulfilling will not be the same, but in terms of the amount of energy that you take as compared from a fruit, as compared to a packet of potato chips, you're better off with the fruit.
Have you tried eating a carrot when you are going through, when you're crying? The carrot doesn't carry the same way when you're crying. No, guys, me, I like being real with topics. Eh? Carrot does not carry the same when you are sad. You know, the carrot is good when you're happy. But dare I say, when you're sad, the carrot does not carry it. I don't want asparagus when I'm sad. I want a tub of vanilla ice cream when I'm sad.
But then when you take a vanilla ice cream phase, then you end up with a whole lot of sugar, a whole lot of energy that you take, which is not a good idea. Like I said, the taste will not be the same as you're taking something sugar or something fatty. But the issue is when you're an emotional eater, try to make sure that whatever you eat will not influence on your health or have an impact in terms of your weight. So you're better off with something that will give you less energy, less sugar and less fat as much as possible. And try, you know, some of the things you just need to teach yourself, because there's no medication that's going to help you to say, today I'm sad, I'm that is going to stop you eating. So best option is to make sure that you eat something that is less fatty and less sugar. That's as much as possible.
Sure. Samantha, but it also speaks deeply into how we resolve our internal battles.
Yes, Faith. And I'd also just like to add a little bit to the previous contribution. This eating when you are unhappy or depressed or anxious, whatever the case is, actually is what we call an emotional eating cycle. There's a happy happy eating cycle, and there's also a depressive one as well. You eat when you feel guilty, and they, you know, you are powerless over the food. And this, you know, when something happens, you eat again, and this overwhelming urge to eat. So I think that it's very important for you to look at your emotions and what is triggering you to go towards that food. And try to, like I said before, use other emotional outlets. So you're going to have to put yourself in a space where you have control over the food and not it over you. And sometimes you may not win that battle, but it's very important to forge ahead with whatever willpower you have to stop being an emotional eater.
Sure. I'm going to go to Owen in Brits. Hi, Owen. Hi, Owen. Oh, Owen has disappeared. Des, maybe around also takeouts, right? How much we actually spend on takeouts simply because we don't have the time any longer to be at home, to prepare our meals, to, and I can attest, buying takeouts really does strain your budget because you just, you know, you could be literally preparing, and while you're preparing meals, I don't know if anybody does this, but whilst you're preparing the meal, I find that I become full from cooking. Because you're taking in the smells, you're doing the tasting, you're doing the, you know, there's a whole activity around it. But if I'm just buying takeout, I'm spending, but I can imagine how much that's also adding into the economy.
Absolutely. This is actually to a point that I wanted to add to the conversation, to saying that we have social media, we have the traditional media. We know what is being advertised and made to look cool, right? And in most cases, it is often the not sugary foods, processed foods, which is also in most cases even cheaper than your wholesome foods that you could buy that we should be eating. And that also sometimes leads to habit, you know, as often as, or at least how much money you have leads you to how often do you buy certain types of foods. And when it's a habit, it's really difficult to basically kick. And also, like you said, I mean, the quality of food, what is it that it can buy you? So the relationship with how you relate with food perhaps can be looked at as how you also relate with your money. In other words, what I'm trying to say is how we relate with ourselves, you know, holistically, is something that we need to consider.
Sure. Jablanu Shabang was saying that, good afternoon, Faith. I normally eat uncontrollably when I'm sad and normally gain a lot of weight when I'm sad. I manage to control my body weight when I'm happy. Food and retail therapy are my comfort when I'm sad. I want us to talk about men, Madume.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much this conversation is actually quite popular amongst men, right?
Mm-hmm.
That when they are going through something, men have got emotions too, and sometimes they don't have outlets. Could food, especially for men, because it's seen as popular for, when a man has got six slices of bread, we almost applaud it. It's like, yay, he's eating, right? But I wonder if it's something to be applauded. When a man is eating consistently, we think he's a healthy man. But how much of that is just the man masquerading or masking his emotional battles with meals, with food? And then we see men who walk around, pardon me, with 42 packs. And then we think it's because of alcohol. But no, it actually could be because of the emotional turmoil that's going inside, that where the outlet has become six slices of bread.
It probably can be twofold, that the man is stressed out. And the other thing is one of those things that we, as a man, if you don't eat, people start to label you somehow. As a man, if you're not hefty, people think there's something wrong with you. You're not enjoying life. So it is important, again, whether man or woman, to try to understand, you know, if you are going to be eating six slices of bread, are you eating that because you're hungry, or you're eating that out of emotions? And if it's out of emotions, we as men, we probably need to find a way of somehow best how to deal with those problems, because resorting to food as the way to solve your problem, you actually adding more problems on top of that. Because by the time you get overweight, there's a whole lot of other conditions that are attached to being obese. So then you create much more problems. So it's important as men to go out and seek help when you've got problems and not resort to food. And the issue of us as we grow being blackmailed into, as a man, if you're not eating, you're not going to be masculine, you're not going to be this and that. That needs to end. People need to eat the amount of food that is necessary for them to be able to live. Not necessarily that we need to build a certain figure that a man's supposed to be.
What about being black or being African? Yeah. You know, when you are, when you grow up in a family, so I grew up in a family, and I know how many people are like this, where if you're seen as skinny, you're seen as an anomaly, right? It's not something natural. So they'll often say, ooh, odile, you know? But, and then when you are overweight, they'll say, ooh, osdodle. So there's never like winning, in, especially when it comes to family environments, right? And a lot of the black families almost, and I wonder how many black families actually body shame. Right, where a lot of our body shaming comes from our aunts. It comes from our uncles who will tell you, "Khoro ugenile weight." The first thing that they say before "How are you?" is "Oh, ugenile weight."
Yeah.
Or from our you know, our black circles where we just look at each other's weight, and I just wonder how many are black people obsessed with their weight, and does it add to our confidence, you know, and how we relate with food? I don't like it when I go to family gatherings. I'm always seen as, oh, you're so skinny. And I go, yes, I'm skinny again, you know, but it doesn't help when you say another family member, because you almost ask yourself,
you know, a very funny story. When I used to have a practice in Joburg, there's this client of mine comes in, overweight. And then I'm like, okay, I think this is a case of somebody wanting to lose weight. And guess what? She says to me, I need to gain weight. And hear me perplexed. Why do you want to gain weight? It's because I am a supervisor at work and everyone else is way overweight than me and they can't listen to me.
Hmm.
That's how sad it is. The next thing, you know, as you grow, you graduate. After graduating, everyone thinks that you need to have money. And when you have money, it means that you need to gain weight. The moment you start working and then you still maintain your weight, you get home, whether it's aunts or uncles or cousins and everything. Faith, why are you not gaining weight? You're working at Power FM. You're earning at the end of the month. What's wrong with you? People at this day and age, we can't be using weight as some sort of connotation of saying you've got power.
Or wealth.
You've got wealth, you've got money. It does not work because given the health conditions that are attached to being obese or overweight in this day and age, you'll probably suffer a whole lot of repercussions for just being overweight. And we need to stop this thing of every now and then like I'm saying, high face, before somebody can even say high face, oh, you look skinny, or hi, Madumi, oh, you've gained a whole lot of weight. That needs to stop because it does not send a good message to the next person.
Yeah, but it also is a very emotional one, Samantha. And I wonder, how do we call families out on that? And do we have that responsibility to call our family members? I mean, to call our aunts out, to call our extended family members, our grannies out on, hi, you've gained. And I wonder if it's just a black thing. Like, I don't even think it's just a black thing. I think it happens in many families. But I think that there's a lot of freedom in how to express it within the black community. Yeah.
I think it happens across the board. So, yes, I don't think it happens particularly in the black community. I think it happens amongst other communities as well. I think we need to start setting a new precedent. I think we need to become mindful about our eating. I think we need to set new mindsets around weight. So growing healthy mindsets towards weight, no pun intended, balanced mindsets. And I think that sometimes this knowledge or these comments that come from our family members are not necessarily coming from a place of knowledge. And I think that that's where, you know, we as a society or community is coming towards building a healthy mindset. And I think we're progressively moving towards that. If we see all of the inroads and the strides being made on healthy living, on eating healthily, on balanced diets, etc. So I think that it's a manner of dealing with it in a respectful and very tactful manner, and passing on that knowledge of balanced and healthy eating in a way that will resonate with our family members, and perhaps they might even take on that. That knowledge for themselves as well.
Sure. Let me go to Brits. Hi, Owen.
Good afternoon, my sister.
Yes, sir.
I work with people every day, and recently there's something that I've realized about myself. It's a self-observation. I've observed myself that I'm a little bit grumpy every now and then. It seems like I can wake up on the wrong side of the bed and feel grumpy. But as soon as I would have something sweet, that whole thing changes. And now I believe it has to have a biological explanation. Why is it that when I have taken something sweet, then my mood changes? I become somehow happy now. I can even greet people. Because at some point, when I'm serving a customer, she would like greet at me, and I'll be very short-tempered at some point. And it's worrisome. It's worrisome because I work with people every day. So it means I have to take something sweet, like chocolate or cold drink.
Yeah.
So there must be a biological explanation to that.
Let's ask the dietitian, Madume.
There are probably not even any biological explanation to it. When you take something sweet, you literally... sugar gives you a bit of energy. It might be the guy is just too tired. He just needs a bit of energy to get up. So it might just be that. Yes, the guy might be literally having a whole lot of other things that, you know, no one can really diagnose right now. We are on radio. It might be better for him probably go and consult and try to understand if he doesn't have any other psychological issues that are pertaining to his problem. But, I mean, sugar can do anything. It just gives you energy. And then that literally can brighten up your mood.
If we have to look at, Des, how much is actually being lost within the health system as a result of these non-communicable diseases, we keep stressing this. I mean, we have these conversations time and time again about healthy eating, about obesity, about looking after ourselves much better. But I worry that we're not getting the message to a point where people want to change. And we start worrying about the life expectancy in South Africa as a result of this. And you may live long, but you may live long quite unhealthy.
That is, excuse me, that is true. And the unfortunate part is that the more we see this increase happen, we should also anticipate an increase in cost of dealing with such health conditions that we have to treat. And at the end of the day, this is where we also are contributing as South Africans, or at least working South Africans, which are taxpayers, towards that health system where majority of the country cannot afford, private health care. They depend on this particular, state facilities. And we will continue basically seeing that increase the more we seeing, people basically, continuing to increase. So that is why also I refer this to, perhaps a relationship that we should be having, not only with the food, but with ourselves holistically, and also our money spent or our habitual spending of our money. How often do we buy food? It's easier to buy food than to buy clothes, right? And it's easier to buy than, some sugary, food as compared to an alternative. And these are accumulating and are being made more available. And the more we see that, the more we see people basically eating unhealthily, and it will result in this and continuing to see an increased spend in our health system due to obesity and or overweight.
Yeah, Samantha, help us as a parting shot, really start looking inward in developing perhaps healthier habits, especially our approach to food.
I think it's pretty important. I would just like to go back to the previous caller who spoke quickly about sweets. And it's important to understand that as soon as we eat sweets, it increases the dopamine. And that is our brain's reward system. It gets activated and we start to then, have good associations with that. So, that's why I suppose biologically he would feel good when he has some sweets, and it would change his mood around. I think it's very important from a psychological level to understand why you go towards the triggers before, the triggers after. Listen to your body, listen to your mind, become a mindful eater. Prepare for stress, plan for it as well. Be that particular individual that is in what we call, in psychology, what we call disease resistant as opposed to disease prone, by knowing who you are and also allowing yourself not to punish yourself when you eat foods that you don't necessarily see as healthy, but to enjoy them, but to have that balance. And I think only you as a person can strike that balance for yourself.
I like that. I'm going to have to leave it there. Samantha Rajaram, Madume Dial, as well as Des Swahili, much appreciated for your time this afternoon.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.